Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the January 11 edition of Commodity Week. Well, the United States Department of Agriculture has released the final crop production figures for the 2012 season. We'll discuss them and much more today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Alan Brugler of Brugler Marketing and Management from Omaha, Nebraska. Our panelists today include Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing from Morton, Illinois, Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities out of Watseka, Illinois, and Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Have you visited our website lately at willag.org? If you do, you'll find a link to Voices of Illinois Agriculture. Won't you join me Friday, January the 25th for an evening of agricultural camaraderie? We'll share a little Illinois wine, eat some great Grand Championship pork, hear stories from Paul Cooley, do a little Ag Outlook with Wayne Nelson, Jackie Vakes, Steve Freed, and Gary Schnitke, and best of all, dine with Orion Samuelson. Your $100 ticket buys the meal, the show, and a signed copy of the Big O's new book. Even better, the funds raised will support the College of ACES Agricultural Communications and Hospitality Management programs. They're two of my favorites. You can register today online at willag.org or by calling this number, 217-333-9355. That's 217-333-9355.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
Well, let's open our discussion with this question. Chip Nellinger, how is it that the average trade guess for the DEIS-1 grain stocks number for corn was 200 million bushels too high?
That is a great question. I think a lot of people are probably still scratching their head on that. On the one hand, the most obvious thing about that was grain-consuming animal units up 18%. Higher compared to what a lot of people were comparing in that last drought year in 1988. I think the other thing is that the big question remaining, did we double count old crop bushels as new crop down south at the start of an early harvest? And there's always, I think, a negative bias because of all the shocks that you've seen on quarterly stocks reports. So I think the action prior to the report release at 11 probably tipped us off that the market was really leaning more bearish into a short resolution or an expectation of a very bearish report.
Merrill Crowley?
I have to agree with Chip to some degree. The last few times we've seen these changes when we've had early harvests, we've seen about 200 million difference somewhere down the line, usually less in the total stocks. The other thing is possibly with these animal units being heavier, the cattle on feed are going to heavier weights, might have used more corn than what people were thinking.
And Mike Zuzolo.
Well, and you know, Darrell Good had put out a mid-December outlook or piece of analysis exactly on this, Todd, and said it would be one of the hardest to try and guess because of what Chip and what Merrill were talking about. And I think that early harvest and what type of old crop, new crop mixing might have gotten done, especially given what type of drought we had and the extremely early harvest and the aflatoxin corn going very quickly into commercials' hands. I think that and the balancing out of the feed and residual, like Chip was talking about, it seems to me that we're finally at a point now where we can put to bed some of these issues with the demand side and the supply side with corn that we've been carrying for about 9 months now.
The USDA, when they finished all the numbers up, Mike, came out with a 602 million bushel carryout for corn ending stocks for this marketing year. That is just pipeline and really, really tight.
Lowest in 9 years. And I think going into the report, the fundamental path of least resistance, because we were starting to see a perk up in demand, Todd, that we could go higher if the USDA didn't step in our way and if the technicals didn't spur more hedge fund-related selling. So that is a very good number to work with as we get into the middle part of January. And I think and I hope that between the basis and the end users stepping back in and more of a more than just hand-of-mouth demand, that we'll start to see the cash market and the spreads take more control and take more power out of the funds.
I agree with Mike 100%. I was still left a little bit confused at 2 o'clock, given price action. Initially, when I saw that quarterly stocks number and the tighter-than-anticipated ending stocks number, I thought corn would lock limit up. We didn't see that. We faded into the close. A little confusing. I think the 11 o'clock report release probably, the United States was just the only ones involved. It was evening in Europe, and it was in the middle of the night in Asia. So I think it's going to be more important Monday how we close than maybe how we closed on Friday. But, yeah, I agree. I think basis, cash basis for old crop corn already is stronger than average and could get really, really good before it's said and done.
Hey, Merrill, when we finish the day up, the March contract gained a dime, but December futures in the corn finished, 7 cents lower. So there was a 17-cent spread by the end of the day on Friday afternoon.
Well, it's been quite a while since we've seen any bull spread work. So that also gives credence to what they're talking about in seeing that maybe the fundamentals are starting to switch around enough so that we start to see the corn market maybe lead us out to the higher levels. That corn saw 720, that's 720, 25, all the way up to 30, is strong resistance. And being later in the day, like Chip was talking about, maybe that just didn't have enough push to move on through with the weekend ahead of us.
Higher levels for old crop, but for new crop as well or not?
For new crop, I still think they're looking at the 90 million acres. And if this old crop goes up, and depending on what it can do with the average for February, we could end up seeing more corn acres.
I disagree a little bit just from the acreage standpoint. I think it's one thing if we're at 630, 640, probably stand to plant quite a few acres. If we come into February and we're under where we closed on Friday, it's called 560, 550, something like that, I think it's going to be tougher to plant the corn acres. But to your initial question, I think there was a lot of spread activity, and that probably confused some of the trades as well, not only old crop, new crop corn, but corn, beans, wheat was in there. It was just an interesting type of a day on Friday.
Hey, Mike, can you put into perspective in your own mind a couple of things that we've talked about? Of course, there'll be the number of acres that will be planted and also the spread action. And maybe you can give us an idea of whether you believe that the number of corn acres attracted by the marketplace now will be that 97, 98, 9900 million acres or not.
I think it's going to be harder to get over 98, Todd, at this point. And I say that because the top eight or so corn-producing states that plant soft red wheat on today's report or on Friday's report are up about a little over 900,000 acres in soft red wheat planting versus last year. So I think that 98 level is probably the top end at this point because so much more soft red wheat got planted this past fall. I think as far as the new crop acres, I do think that the tightness of the old crop supplies, especially if we can get the wheat weather to back us up and take wheat out of the feed grain category, I think we could have an acreage battle again for new crop corn because of the tightness of supplies now in the old crop and the bull spread working in our advantage.
What do you think of USDA, Chip, raising the average national yield for corn?
Thought it was a little interesting. I guess I was more shocked by the acreage, that they didn't adjust acreage more. I can see that's within the realm of expectation. Still an awful poor crop, any way you cut it. So it shocked me a little bit, but probably not as much. I guess I was expecting a bigger cut in harvested acreage. That's what shocked me the most out of the supply and demand part of the report.
Well, the average, they added acreage that was planted, of course, but they cut harvested acreage. But once you balance the two out, it didn't make that much of a difference, I suppose.
Well, early on, they came out in a special meeting, and I'm not sure what meeting that was, and they mentioned that they had already done a survey with the farmers and that they thought these were the acres that we would see.
That's right. And did you take a look at those acreage numbers, Mike, and did you agree with them?
No, I'm like Chip. I think that the harvested acres are a little bit too high still, but I can't argue because the feed and residual number was the big issue for the last 9 months, and I think the trade was satisfied with the export number, so I'm not going to get tied up on the acreage numbers or the yield at this point. I think it's really about the demand side because this report, in my view, really set us up with the idea again for both wheat and corn. Supply is falling faster than demand again. I hope that gets the end users from the hand-to-the-mouth mindset and attitude and gets them buying out, and we pick up people like South Korea again.
Merrill, turn your attention to the soybean numbers, 135 million bushels for the carryout at the end of this year. That's a really small number.
Yes, it is, and I guess I was surprised to see the pressure the soybean market was taking. And the only thing I can think of right now is that we are looking at such a large new crop within a relatively short time coming our way. And once that hits, some of these export sales that we are getting more, I think, will be switched to South America.
It is a small number, but it's bigger than the last USDA report.
It was, and I guess I agree with Merrill. I didn't see where all the pressure came from in the bean market. It was up, but it was right in line with the average expectation for ending stocks. Probably, in my opinion, have room to both raise crush and exports a touch before it's said and done, but I didn't see anything bearish there. I was a little surprised we saw the pressure, and I agree. I think South America is looming large in traders' minds right now.
Yeah, so maybe that's where the pressure came from, was South America as opposed to the USDA reports?
I think that's a big part of it. It wasn't, I guess, bullish compared to expectations, and that leads you to believe, well, there's nothing that we need to rally significantly from the numbers themselves, and you default back to what looks like an awful big crop on more acres coming out of South America.
Mike, USDA suggests that Brazil will be the largest soybean producer on the planet by the time we get done with this particular marketing year. I don't know whether that will be the case or not. Maybe you can tell us that. And then, of course, as far as exports go, they didn't change them for the United States, and we have been on just a pace that's been really rapid.
Yeah, and that to me, along with that weather issue that the other guys were talking about, I think that's where the bearishness came in on Friday, Todd, was that we didn't get an increase. And I think you're going to have to really be critical of that if you're in a private analytical firm watching the exports, because we're still on commitments on a pace of about 27% ahead of schedule. And I would also say this past week, we saw China come back in and buy the 12-13 beans on fresh sales. I don't think we ever got a chance to trade that during the trading week because the USDA report was just the spotlight when that came out Friday morning, that new export sale came out Friday morning. But that's a huge thing for me because it puts to bed the issue that they canceled and they're not going to buy, or they canceled and they're moving their origin down to Brazil. That's not happening yet. So Monday to me, like Chip was talking about in corn, Monday for me is huge in beans because we've got Jan bean expiration in the middle of the day with a 57-cent premium to the March futures, which will then be lead month, and we'll also get the NOPA crush number. So I think beans really have some upside potential if we can start it at the first of the week.
So, Merrill, I've got two that are telling me Monday is going to be a big trade day at this point, and it may start in the overnight, the first time that the folks overseas will really have a chance to trade much of the USDA report. Would you agree with them?
Now, that's a good question. I just think it could go either way. Beans could find support down here. There be a triple bottom, which would, if it would hold, would provide good support for a bounce off. And if corn can continue to lead, it would help pull the soybeans along. Like I said, I am somewhat confused as to why those beans didn't react better today.
Confused. So about the beans, but let's go through the process here and not worry about old crop at this point because there's not that much around, but new crop. Are there indications from this report that producers in your mind, and I'll pull each of you very quickly, as to whether farmers should consider taking a position in the marketplace to protect profits that are already in place? We'll start with you, Merrill.
It never is wrong to take profits. I just feel like in a lot of years following big or high prices, we always get a fairly good bounce coming sometime in the spring that will usually give you a better opportunity to price. Once I have the average for February, then I can see that we should get at least one or two more opportunities to price at that February average or higher. So I'm willing to wait at this time.
I would agree 100%. Focus on profits for sure. We will know more when that February spring crop insurance price is set. But I guess 6, 10 and above and back towards 13 on the December 13 corn and November 13 bean futures, that's where we see the protection needing to be taking place.
Very short, Mike.
Okay, 13 paper sales and beans would be likely, in my opinion, Todd, if we went through the November lows of 12.55 and a quarter on a closing basis, but I would only go to 50% at that point.
I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser with a look at the weather for corn and soybean production in South America. Last week I reported that the northern Brazilian production areas, including center west and southeast Brazil and Bahia, had been rather dry over the past month. That dry pattern continued into this week, but as expected, widespread thunderstorms recently evolved. It appears going forward that ample rainfall is likely across this area during at least the next 10 days. Some long-range models now suggest this area will experience above-average rainfall for the rest of the month. Thus, the 4 to 9-inch rainfall deficits over the past 30 days should rapidly disappear. Farther south in Brazil and in neighboring Paraguay, rainfall has been heavy during the past month. Amounts have been more than double to nearly triple average in Rio Grande do Sul, Brazil, and eastern Paraguay. Favorable, drier weather is expected during the coming week and likely beyond. Winds are also expected to continue to blow in from the Atlantic Ocean, holding temperatures down, which benefits crops entering the reproductive stage. In Argentina, the weather pattern continues to change, and while changes in the short term are going to be beneficial for crops, longer term we'll have to continue to monitor the situation. Much of Argentina has been very wet for months, putting planting behind and yield potential into question. Now Argentina is turning drier. A couple of weeks of dry weather will not be a problem. However, longer range models suggest that dry conditions could last for at least several weeks, and that eventually could become problematic. As for heat in Argentina, temperatures in the mid-90s to low 100s are mostly confined to far western production areas this week. High heat should stay to the far west in the coming week and not impact many important production areas. That is your South American weather update for Commodity Week. I'm meteorologist Ed Kieser.
This is the January 11 edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. In studio with us, Merrill Crowley of Crowley Commodities and Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing. Mike Zuzulo is on the phone line from Global Commodity Analytics Consulting. And our special guest today is Alan Brugler, Brugler Marketing and Management. He's from Omaha, Nebraska. Thank you so much for taking the time with us, Alan. Could you go through some of the numbers that you found of most interest? USDA released on Friday at 11 o'clock, and maybe give us your assessment of that 11 o'clock Central Time release.
Well, we'll start with the last part first. I think the release during the day did mitigate some of the pent-up demand or pent-up selling that we usually used to get when you had the numbers at 7:30 and didn't start trading until 9 or 9:30. We got some fairly violent moves there early in the session and then kind of sold off into the close. But I'm not too concerned by the sell-off. I think that was pre-weekend profit-taking, and you got to remember that the index funds are still in there doing their asset allocation trades for the first part of the year here, and in soybeans and corn they were supposed to be sellers. So I think part of that end-of-day stuff was just the index funds putting some more positions on. Going back to the crop report itself, I thought the harvested acreage number was very reasonable. When we looked at for corn, if we look at the actual abandoned acres, it was actually above trend after this adjustment. when you compare it to some of the other drought years. And actually, in terms of the raw number of acres that were silage or otherwise abandoned, it was not a line at all. So we were looking for, at max, a 1 million acre cut, and felt it would probably be less than that. I think the yield is very consistent with our virtual corn tour numbers that we put out back in August. They're usually within a bushel and a half of final, and this got it within 7/10. So we're fairly satisfied there. I think the main numbers to look at were those stocks numbers. 602 million for corn is definitely down to pipeline supply. Pipeline is probably a little smaller than we're used to thinking of because the export program is so small right now, but definitely not leaving a lot of wiggle room there. And remember, they've already taken the 200 million bushels off the corn exports. So the market's got to start allocating the bushels that are left. I think the grain stocks report had a lot of interesting things in it. I mostly focused on the corn today. But just to throw a couple of quick numbers at you, the Western Corn Belt production was down 1.7 billion bushels versus a year ago. The Western Corn Belt stocks were down 14% versus a year ago. Over to the Eastern Corn Belt, which we're including Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio, and that the stocks there for corn as of December 1 were the smallest since 1995. So you're going to see some really scarce resources here as we go into 2013 a little further. You're going to have, particularly in states like Missouri, where the stocks were down 38% from a year ago, it's going to be very difficult to find corn by next summer. And as was alluded to earlier, I think it's got to either be a basis play or the board's got to rally to give that flat price a little bit of a boost here.
Alan, as you look out into new crop, what's your, thoughts on acreage potential and maybe what type of price potential we have out here on new crop corn and beans?
Well, one thing that struck me this morning, and it was actually in the secretary's briefing that Joe Prasaki sends around, is that principal acreage planted ended up being 326.3 million acres, and that's larger than we had in 04 or 03 or 08 for that matter. And so we got to be getting a little bit scarce on additional acres to bring in overall. I think it's going to be tough to get corn acreage up above 97 or so. Just if you look at the extra soft red acres, which I think Mike mentioned, it's going to make it hard to get Eastern Corn Belt corn acreage up. And you've definitely got some cotton ground going out of production this year or going into the other crops. But keep in mind, we've also got a drought going in the Western Corn Belt. The Plains states and Iowa, for that matter, are very concerned about soil moisture right now. I did a meeting in Goodland, Kansas this week. The guys are telling me a third of their wheat's already dead there, and they're wondering why the market isn't rallying just because of that lack of moisture and the likelihood that it's going to hurt yields. Getting to your question about prices, we're really not that far off of the highs, if you will, on the D's corn. Of course, it's at a discount to the nearbys. We've got chart support at 571, and then we've got some more down in the 540s. I think that's one or the other is going to catch us for now. I think if nearby March starts to get going here a little bit, and we do have some stochastics and other buy signals, you'll get the bull spread activity, but it will eventually pull the D's back up a little bit. One statistic you might be interested in, out of the last 37 years, December corn has taken out the January high 33 times, sometime later in the year. So we think this could be the fifth year, of course, but we think that's a pretty good argument for not getting very heavily sold up on this new crop here.
Yeah, I keep looking for someone who may be able to give me an answer. We're looking at a large amount of grain that's going to be demanded of the South American logistics, corn and soybeans. And I don't think we've really seen them handle this amount. What is your opinion on their ability to meet these export needs in this coming year?
Well, they're definitely ramping up their capacity, and the government down there is, in Brazil in particular, has made it known that they're putting a fair amount of dollars, reals, into that process, trying to expand the infrastructure at the port specifically. depends on which ports you're looking at, too. I mean, you've got places up in the north, like at São Luís, it's basically just a big auger going out into the water. So it doesn't take a lot of money or engineering to put another couple of augers in if you got a place you can berth the ship. I think they'll be able to expand their port throughput probably on the order of 10 to 20%, maybe not all of that being permanent facilities, but you're still going to get contention between corn and beans wanting to get out of there at the same time as you get into March and April and May here. So, we're going to get some business because they're just not going to be able to ship everything, you know, out of the ports on time. I am concerned, though, that particularly shift into beans, that export inspections for July and August could very well be only 2 or 3 million bushels a week out of the U.S.
Alan, looking at Friday's hard red acres with Kansas down 2%, Colorado down 6% versus last year, and you brought up the Western Corn Belt and the Kansas drought, countercyclical break to the downside. What's your best take as far as a turnaround in this wheat market? Are we going to have to wait all the way to February or March? What do you think?
Well, we looked at some of these similar years, like 2002, where we had this kind of a winter drought going in the hard red. And it is interesting that it tended to bottom out in late January, early February, and then rallied into March. So I think it's more of an issue of the trade not wanting to focus on the subject until it comes out of dormancy. As you probably know, there's not a very good correlation between the crop condition ratings in the fall or early winter and the final yield. We keep thinking there should be because if you don't have a stand, how are you going to get a crop? But the reality is if it comes out of dormancy and gets some decent moisture and you've got the fertility, you'll get some extra tillering, and it's hard to really show major yield impact. The abandonment is probably the bigger question. We did a look at that. The last 10 years, the hard red winter wheat abandonment has averaged 22% of the planted. Now, keep in mind, that's not all abandoned. Some of it's just grazed out because you're trying to put cheap gain on feeder cattle, and there's a shortage of hay. That could very well happen again. In the drought years, it does tend to go back towards about 72% of the planted acreage ends up being harvested for grain.
Alan, USDA in its commentary suggested that its numbers today would support at least old crop corn prices through mid-year or July. Would you agree with that commentary, or do you have a different take?
Well, I agree it's going to support the old crop prices. The timing is always kind of iffy. There's a magic tipping point there where the end users have got enough coverage to get them to new crop, and the market just starts to anticipate that and goes down into harvest. Now, again, we're assuming that there's normal or decent production in 2013. We thought that last year and it didn't happen.
Thank you so much for taking the time with us.
You're welcome.
That's Alan Brugler. He's with Brugler Management and Marketing out of Omaha, Nebraska. Now, a final word from our panelist in studio. We'll start with Chip Nellinger.
Well, I would say, given all the numbers in this report, don't panic from a production standpoint with any sales or bad decisions down here at the low end of the ranges, but be more than willing to reward strong basis on old crop with setting basis in sales and start on new crop corn and beans back above 6 and 13 respectively.
Merrill Crowley?
I would think producers would want to get themselves in a situation where they could have their profits locked in, and if we go down the year farther, it looks like we could have a lot of crops, South American and North America, and prices would be lower.
And Mike Zuzalo.
Feeders need to be on the hunt for locking in the rest of first quarter and second quarter needs if we don't find any kind of resistance here at early week trade.
Thank you so much to Merrill Crowley and Mike Zuzalo and Chip Nellinger for joining us on this January 11 edition of Commodity Week, along with Alan Brugler. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.